It's like a nonstop process of figuring out, you know, what else can I do with the ingredients that I have? You can put pears in salads. Mm-hmm. You can put broccoli, you know, in a quesadilla. You can do all, it doesn't have to be the star ingredient.
Right.
Right. It can still be your favorite, you know, whatever type of quesadilla or whatever it is that you want. You're not sacrificing flavor or nutrition, but you are getting creative. And I think more importantly, like minimizing waste. And when you do that, you're saving a lot of money, .. like without sacrificing flavor.
Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Kirsten.
And I'm Julian. And first, we want to wish you a very happy new year. Welcome to 2022, y'all. We want to kick off the year the right way, talking about one of our favorite subjects. No, not money. We are talking about food.
Food,
our favorite four-letter word.
Yeah.
Second favorite. Nah, we'll say first.
Yes, it's certainly something you could do all day.
Yes, yes.
Food. Talk about food, I mean.
Yes, food. Oh. Wow. Welcome to 2022.
I just didn't want anybody to be confused.
Listen.
Go ahead.
They've already lost track. Hopefully we can reel them back in. We are talking about food. It is one of our favorite subjects. It is certainly one of my favorite subjects. I know we've alluded to it in previous podcast episodes. I can probably assure you on 50, maybe 75% of every episode I make some type of food reference. It's just who I am. Mm-hmm. It's the way that I think. So this shouldn't be that bad because I'll actually be focused on the subject.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, food is one of the big expenses. It's one of the top three, or the big three, as people call them.
Yeah, the big three. It's so a reference to the big three, if you're new to our podcast, and really not our podcast, but personal finance as a whole, the big three is really a reference to the big three expenses that most Americans have. Those big three expenses are typically in order of what eats up the most sort of share of wallet would be housing. Second would be transportation. And third would be food. We're going to kind of skip the first two and really dive into the third one. Maybe we'll go back and do the first, second at a later podcast.
I mean, I just feel like a lot of people assume that we always talk about food because you used to be a former chef and because I like to eat. But yeah, the reality is there actually is plenty of financial content on real estate and housing.
Correct.
There's plenty of financial content on cars and automobiles. And like, there isn't as much about the routines and the habits that people have with their food, despite the fact that you always have to eat.
Yes.
Even when you pay off your mortgage or pay off your car note, you still got to eat. It is a forever expense.
Yes, yes. And we've always kind of jokingly called it our secret weapon, because it is. I mean, literally anytime I'm in a pinch or we're in a pinch and we're thinking of ways to save money, my mind always sort of goes immediately to menu planning, because I know, yes, that's a great sort of first step that we know that we can figure out a good balance between saving money without like sacrificing like our nutrition or health needs, or just like in wanting to enjoy ourselves and eat better.
Yeah, it's actually like our first round of defense from using the emergency fund. Like,
oh, sure.
I had a $600 tire mishap last month.
You did.
And instead of immediately going to the place where we go when we have unexpected expenses, it's like, all right, well, what can we shave from, you know, the eat out budget? What can we shave from the grocery budget to make, yeah, sure that we, you know, don't dip where we shouldn't dip?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think even today, though we're not like in, you know, our big debt payoff days or even like big hyper investment days, we're kind of just like enjoying life and kind of taking it as it comes. I mean, food and cooking at home is something that, you know, I always feel good about doing, because, mm-hmm, it's not only like better for us compared to dining out in terms of like spending and nutrition. It's the most affordable option for, right, our family. And so we look forward to it. And we're certainly looking forward to talking about it today on our podcast to kick off the new year. We're going to share some tips and some pointers for our listeners out there, because I think, to your point, there really isn't a lot out there. That was one of the reasons why we really, not just this podcast, but started talking about it years ago, because it was like, why is nobody talking, right, about this? But we then realized it's because they can't,
right? Right.
You can actually find books and information about it, but it's really difficult to find a chef who's also willing to have these kinds of detailed conversations about budgeting or how to save money. So here I am, and I'm here to sort of crack open all of my experiences and share as much as I can within the 30 minutes that this podcast
Luckily, allows. It's good timing because it's also the first week of the new year. And I know a lot of people have food-related goals as a part of their resolutions.
Right.
Whether it's cooking more at home or even just being more conscious of nutrition and healthy choices, the way that I've seen most people jump right into their goal is by either doing a bunch of meal prep. Yeah. So you've seen it on Instagram, like the rows and rows and rows of the same chicken and like
chicken,
asparagus.
Broccoli.
Right. So they either do like a ton of meal prep or they look at a bunch of recipes.
Yeah.
Like just start pinning all the recipes. And you actually have strong takes about both of those actions.
I do.
But I think the hottest take that you have and the one that you share with another acclaimed chef, David Chang, is that people don't actually need recipes.
That's correct.
So can you talk more about why you say that?
Because yeah.
I was a non-believer. I definitely believed I needed recipes.
Yeah, yeah. So shout out to David Chang. I think we heard this on his latest series on Hulu.
Yeah.
I think it's called The Next Thing You Eat or something like that. And I was like, oh my gosh, we really are like in tune or in lockstep in terms of the way that he thinks.
Mother.
I can't wait to meet him. I hope that I get a chance to meet him. If any of our listeners know David Chang, please don't hesitate. I don't know him.
Broker the intro.
Yeah, just hook us up. But I'll say this, as a former culinary professional, I can tell you that recipes by and large are helpful for people who are looking to replicate very specific dishes. But the goal, I think, for most people and certainly for the average cook or the person that's just looking to get out of debt, the goal, I think, should be to liberate yourself from recipes altogether. So I think it was 2019, we actually wrote in self-published our first book, which is called Eat Better on a Budget. You can buy that at any point. And it was pretty fun, by the way. Like, I really enjoyed that entire experience. But in it, one of the things that I say is that recipes can tell you what to make, but they don't teach you how to cook. And I think that is 100% true. So, for example, just the other day, I was making homemade ice cream, which, you know, I realized I do this like right around this time of the year. Like, we're at home, and I was like, I just started going crazy with the ice cream machine. But I was making ice cream, and as I was cooking the custard that ultimately becomes the ice cream base, I realized that I let the pan get too hot. And so just about every recipe will tell you really want to avoid that because, like, honestly, nobody really wants to end up with, like, sweet scrambled eggs, like instead of like a silky smooth kind of sauce, which is really what an ice cream base is. Anyway, as I was cooking and it got a little hot, I was noticing like just how many things I was naturally doing. And so my stir pattern, the spoon that I had, the way that I was stirring it, the way that I was being intentional about scraping the bottom of the pot or the corners to make sure that, you know, I wasn't like leaving it or the custard there and that it was constantly moving and it was slowly going up to temp. Like those aren't things that a recipe can tell you. Right. Like that's only
can't tell you.
Well, can't tell you. No, a recipe. I mean, they may tell you, hey, don't let the pan get too hot, but they're not going to break down all of those other details. They
I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Only experience teaches you that. And I think that's what ultimately makes you a good cook. So a recipe is a great starting point if you really want to try to replicate something and get started. But over time, your job really should be to sort of free yourself from them. And that's why in our book, we literally don't provide any recipes, even though a bunch of people ask for it because, one, I'm a little stubborn about that. But, you know, I felt that if we were to offer recipes, we'd kind of be undermining one of the core points of the book, which is that, hey, you really don't need them. And
right.
Not to mention, there are tons of recipes out there. I can give you a recipe. It really doesn't mean that you're going to end up with the same result or a result that you're even pleased with.
Yeah, it reminds me of the people who spend a disproportionate amount of time and energy on tracking their spending and managing the budget.
Yeah.
Like when something as simple as pay yourself first takes care of most financial goals because it simplifies the choices that you have after that. If you pay yourself first, then that means you simply can spend what you have left.
Right.
There's no need to categorize, upload, shift money, go to an ATM,
right.
refill envelopes, none of that. You're just following the overall guideline.
Yeah.
So anyway, today's episode is really about addressing that tension between wanting to eat well and still be on a budget.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned in our book, we created the our ebook, we created this resource that offers suggestions and real solutions to allow people to really solve some of the challenges they face when they're cooking at home. And our goal was to make people more confident and motivated as home cooks while they were achieving their financial goals.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really important until this day. Like I'm genuinely shocked like that, like not enough people are talking about this, which also makes me pat ourselves on the back a little bit. It's like, hey, we kind of solved a unique problem. So I think most people dive into tracking their spending and cutting back without thinking about like how demotivating that entire experience can be. And I think that's especially true when it comes to cooking. So like if you take someone who eats out or orders in consistently and all of a sudden you throw them into an environment or a situation where they're forced to cook for themselves, I think more often than not, they're going to fail miserably at cooking at home because it doesn't come naturally or easily to them. And I think one of the reasons for that, the first reason I would say is that they typically don't have all of the equipment that they need. They haven't like developed any degree of confidence in their cooking skills and or any familiarity with the foods that they're preparing. And I think part of the reason is that they're so overly focused on saving money and cooking to save money, but not really focused on cooking for the purposes of the food tasting good. And as a result, you know, it's like a one-way ticket to beating themselves up, you know, because they had this goal. They set out to cook more to save money. They don't enjoy what they're doing, but they're either forcing themselves to eat what they don't enjoy, or they just sort of give up altogether. And then they go back to their old practices. And then the cycle just repeats itself. It's like, all right, here I am. I tried this thing. It didn't work. I'm going to give up on that. And I'm going to explore other areas of my budget. And I think that's why food is almost like a lonely budget category that people just leave. They just sort of chalk it up to circumstance. And say, like, there's literally nothing I can do about the food thing because I'm not cooking. I don't know how to cook. I don't like cooking. We really want to help fix that because I actually think that if you get that right, it can be really, really motivating. And it won't feel like such deprivation when you're cooking and trying to enjoy a nice meal at home.
All right. So I want to jump right into a couple of the tips from the book for anyone who may be out there, you know, looking to save money on food this year. And the first one is not exactly intuitive because it has nothing to do with food and everything to do with your kitchen, particularly kitchen storage. Because in the book, you say that kitchen storage is the one thing that most people get totally wrong. Mm-hmm. And to be clear, we're talking about all the places in your kitchen where you store things, cabinets, drawers, pantry, even the fridge. But today, since we're limited on time, I just want to talk about cabinets because I think most people only think about organizing their cabinets one time, and that's the day that they move into their house or their apartment.
They just throw it in, get it in, dump it, drop it in, get it out the way. Yep.
And I know it's not universal, right? You're kind of stuck with this choice forever, but nobody's thinking about it the same way. So you know how like when you go to a friend's house and you're looking for a cup or a bowl and you got to like open up 50 cabinets because none of us are thinking about the best place that cups or bowls should go. So the place that's natural to you isn't the place that's natural to them. And so, you know, it's just a whole thing that there's no universal guidance on. Except you offered some in the book.
I did, and which is unusual for me because I tend to lead with like a very self-empowered message, like whatever works for you. But I was like, actually, there are some guidelines here that you should keep in mind. And it's interesting, even as you're talking, because I'll just be honest, like I haven't read the book. When you write the book, I don't read
the book. Oh my gosh, you wrote it.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I haven't read it in a while.
Oh, in a while.
Because I wrote it, and in my mind, I feel like I don't have to read it. So even as you were mentioning it, I was like, oh, I did say that or write that. I was awakened a little bit. But you're right. That's absolutely, and I still stand by that. That is literally the first thing I think anyone should start out doing. If you're looking to save money, jump into the kitchen, learn how to cook, your first steps actually shouldn't be to start cooking. It should be to organize your kitchen. And in fact, before you even start organizing, I would say the first thing you likely need to do is throw away all the crap that you brought into this process.
Purge. Organize.
Yeah, I would say
purge, then organize.
Purge, then organize. Exactly. So like, I advise most people to get rid of all of the stuff that they just don't use, like the fridge, in the fridge, cupboards, freezer, pantry, all of that stuff. That way, as you're sort of venturing into this new world, you're not surrounding yourself with clutter from like previous years or gifts from people or just things, you know, people buy stuff for your kitchen that you don't even use. Just get rid of that stuff. Like, this is the command center. And I think we wrote that in the book. The kitchen is the command center of your home. So the job should be really about making it clean and efficient. And we even talk about cleaning too, because like that can be very demotivating. It's like, start with cleaning, start with purging, then start with organizing and getting all those other things in there. That's really going to give you that fresh start that I think a lot of people need in order to start cooking. And there are a number of reasons for that. The first one is that you avoid frustration from not being able to find things or for things just being out of order. I think one of the things that people don't realize is where they put their tools or their plates or their glasses. Like, it really matters. This is making me think of there was an early episode of Insecure, if I'm not mistaken, where Issa moved into, what was the guy's name? Moved into one of the guy's apartment.
Daniel's
apartment. And he came home and she'd completely rearranged his kitchen, and he had no idea where the cups were. I'm sure there was a logic behind it, but or maybe that was, you know, literally just her being weird or awkward. But
insecure is the word.
Well, there you go. But I think there's a lot of value in that. And the reason for that is because when you don't really know where things are, like, you're just naturally zigzagging back and forth. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it's like steps. You know, if you put like a Fitbit on or an Apple Watch or something like that, and you track like how long or how many steps you took when your kitchen was disorganized versus when it is, you'll see a drastic difference because you know exactly where things are, and cooking becomes much more intuitive, much more muscle memory. So that's why I say organizing first, making sure that you're clear on where everything is before you jump in. The second reason, though, is really specific to your spice rack. And I think one of the other things that I recommend here is creating two sections for your spice rack. And so most people that I know, it's like all of the spices are just like crammed into one
basket,
or it's like just one giant cupboard. Lazy. There's no real season, order or something like that.
My mom's like that.
What you really should do, and what I really recommend people doing, is being mindful of what you use on a regular basis. So if you use basil, oregano, rosemary, paprika, you know, all of the things that you use more often, move all of those things down. Mm-hmm. Move them down or closer to you. That should be on the bottom shelf of your cupboard or wherever you put it, or to the front of a cabinet, something like that. And put all the things that you don't use, either bring them all together in a basket or just push them to the back or push them further up in the cabinet. Even if they're out of reach, it doesn't matter. But what that does is it makes you just be able to open up that cabinet or that shelf, grab what you need, and you're in and out. Even if at the end of the day, you're saving 5 or 10 minutes, like, to save 5 or 10 minutes to cook dinner is a huge relief, I think, for most people, especially for the parents out there. So that's just a couple of tips I would say around why it's so important to organize first. It's not really about flavor or food. It's just about minimizing frustration, because like, if you're new to cooking, like, that's really what this is about. It's about keeping you on the track, which I think starts with removing all the things that sort of push you off the track.
Yes. And while you're in there organizing your spice rack, make sure that you check the expiration date, because spices do expire.
I know.
Even the dry ones. I know. So if your food's been tasting a little bland, it's likely because you've been using the same seasoning since 2009.
I can't tell you. Well, I put it in there and I was like, yeah.
It's like
2004.
Or you're oversalting your food because you are, you know, you can't taste the salt that's already in your, you know, Lowry's or whatever you, whatever your preferred seasoning is.
If your child is older than your black pepper, it's time.
It's time to replace it.
It's time to replace it.
My grandma used to say older than black pepper.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's how you know. Black pepper, for one, you know, in that little McCormick red and white, or maybe you got the Great Value 10. Just go ahead and upgrade that.
Now, I know a lot of people have trouble with kitchen storage and organization because they have a gadget problem.
Yes.
And when I say a lot of people,
you mean you?
I mean me of the past me. I used to buy every kitchen appliance and gadget on the market. I remember when I was moving out of my apartment into Julian's house when we got engaged, He was just like, how do you have food processors, pancake griddles, grill pans? I had slicers, all an Instant things. Pot, a crock pot, a juicer, and a blender. I mean, I had it all. So you have another hot take here on appliances. What are your thoughts on appliances and how they should be stored, especially when space is like limited in a kitchen?
Yeah, I probably have more than one hot take on appliances. But I think the one that you're referring to, or the most controversial one, is that like most of them are just complete trash. Like most appliances, or they're novelty products, is what I should say. They're things
single use
that solve very specific problems. Like you just like the idea of putting chili on.
It's like the baby industry. Like when you first have a kid, exactly. There are like very specific. Pacifiers that you can freeze with water.
And there's like nose pickers for boys. Yeah. Like right. So specific. Like I get it, but like you really don't need it. You just need, you know, a tissue, you know? But I will also say, you know, like for example, like not only are most of them completely useless or just like so narrowly focused that they don't solve any other real need. Like some of them are just like ridiculously expensive, and I'll call one out in particular. And I'm probably sure we're gonna upset someone on this podcast, but like the Vitamix blender is like a status symbol. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and I think for most people, if all you're making is smoothies, like you don't need a Vitamix. Like a Vitamix is the Mercedes-Benz of blenders. It's like the an upper tier luxury. You don't need a luxury blender. Nobody really needs a luxury blender.
I see why people get frustrated, because you buy the cheap blender for a long time and then you realize that it's limiting. And so, or it breaks. And so to avoid the frustration of like, I have to buy another blender, it's like, I'm just going to buy the best one on the market.
Yeah. And I understand that. I will say that like, there's a lot of room in between.
Exactly.
I don't want to call out the low brand. Y'all know what it is. There's a lot of
mid-grade brands
in between the Hamilton Beach blender and
the Black Friday blender.
Yes, the Black Friday blender is what I should have said. And like the Rolls Royce of blenders, right. The Vitamix. Like we used to use a Vitamix at the Ritz-Carlton. I used to cook at the Ritz-Carlton.
Well, it's good enough for the Ritz.
For years. Right,
it's good like, enough for me.
Like, and at, we use it for like six different things, right? So that actually makes sense. It's like, you know, a Mercedes motor in that thing. Like it's ridiculous. So anyway, nobody needs that. Just get a simple blender. And even in our guide, we give some instructions, some guidance around how to pick a decent blender. The next one, though, or my next hot take on appliances, and this is the other one that, gosh, I get this question at least 50 times a year. And I always say the same thing, but it's around cooking pan sets.
Oh, most like people, the 45 piece.
Which one do
steel
I get? What do you think
set?
About this brand? And because they're so expensive and they come
it's the
in
wedding registries.
Giant boxes.
Yeah.
People see it as an investment, it's going to last forever. And it was like, yeah, I mean, it's metal, right? So like, yes, it's going to pretty much last forever. I get it. But I don't think
it's very specific. Like there are like 8 saute pans in that thing.
Dude, there's
so
much.
4 different pots.
Till this day, I've never met anyone who actually uses, you don't even have that many burners.
Right.
First of all, like, so you don't need the 16 piece set. With all the different colors.
And
like, no
when I was
one needs
moving
that.
Out of my college dorm, I had a big set.
It's super. Yeah, it's like, because you just never know, right?
Yes.
And I understand
but
why
people
get it.
But I only use 2 of them pans regularly.
But I can tell you what I think most people need are a handful and duplicates of the pots and pans that they use most.
That makes
so
sense.
So you need a couple big pots. Mm-hmm. You need, what you need is 2 big pots, 2 medium-sized pots, and maybe 2
pans for eggs.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's all you really need. You can make little things and big things, and you know, you can make that work. But what you don't need is the medium size, the medium size, the super tiny one that fits inside
the handles
small,
and without the handle.
The one without the handle. And it's like you don't need all of that stuff, because it goes back to the first one that we were saying. It just adds to the clutter. Like, yeah. Let's just be honest. You end up using only 3 of the 16, mm-hmm. and everything else just takes up space. And then you get frustrated because you're like, man, I don't have enough space to put any of my stuff. So those are some of my hot takes when it comes to like appliances and things like that. It's really just about buying smarter, making better purchasing decisions, but really focusing on usage and minimization.
Okay, but what about the block of knives? Is that like the pan set?
It is the exact same thing with the pan
set. But it comes in with a little scissor.
People
in the
love
middle.
The scissor.
It's got eight steak knives.
Steak knives. A slightly larger one that's a paring knife. You've got a smaller version
comes
of
in with
a chef
built-in
knife.
Sharpener.
It's so ridiculous. And it's also like not very sanitary because you, unless you're like purposely making sure that you're drying that knife before you're putting
it in
the thing, because it just sits there, that wood gets there, it builds up like mold and that sort of thing. But you never see it because you can't clean inside the block. So I really wouldn't recommend that. They have other knife storage tools that people could use. But yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because that's another one that I get asked
a
lot.
You really only need two or three types of knives.
That's
right?
It. You literally just need, in my opinion, a chef's knife, one that's comfortable for you, a serrated knife, which is like or a bread knife. And then I would say a paring knife.
Okay.
That's pretty much all you need. The other 10 that come with the set and the wooden block, you probably can just avoid. And even if you don't want the block, you can actually get a knife guard. It's like a clip that you put on this end of the blade, so you can put that in a drawer without also then taking up counter space with a giant block that just sits there and gets dusty.
Yes. All right. So for those keeping score at home, if you have a resolution related to food, before you go to the grocery store, you need to organize your kitchen, specifically the cooking area, but also look at your refrigerator, your drawers, throw out any expired spices, and get rid of kitchen appliances that you don't use or that are just taking up space, or at least move them.
Or donate them.
That
makes you feel
better
about being wasteful. Just donate them to a family or someone else that
Absolutely.
Could need it.
Somebody else will use it.
Someone else could use it, or someone else will store it in their cabinets and take up space.
But the point is, you want to prioritize the items that you use day to day. So
that
is the lens that you go into organizing your kitchen with, was, have I used this in the last 4 weeks? If you haven't, it's likely not an item that needs to either be kept, or if you want to keep it, you don't need to store it in your kitchen. Just go look for it in the basement or the garage whenever you're going to use this, right? So far, none of these things should cost you anything. Shout out to us for tips that don't cost any money. But when we come back from break, I want to talk about making the most of grocery shopping. I want to talk about where the money is spent. So we'll be right back. All right, so admittedly, grocery shopping was my big issue. I didn't do it frequently enough, and I was what we call an aspirational shopper.
Oh, I remember these
meaning,
days.
Yes. Meaning I bought single-use ingredients, and I only attempted the prettiest and, you know, the recipes that required a lot of technique. Like, I didn't know it at the time because most recipes don't come with a beginner, intermediate, advanced kind of label.
Right.
But once you would see what I was trying to make, you would explain that, like, you know, when you add cream to a sauce or you put egg in a batter, it requires a special treatment to not make it just be eggy or what's the word for cream? Like congealed or whatever.
Yeah.
Curdled. So I think when it came to grocery shopping, one of the things you taught me was the importance of a list, and not just any old list. The list needed to be sort of organized and thoughtful so that as you're making your way through the grocery store, you can, you know, do it the most efficient way. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So having a list is so critical, especially when it comes to like people like you used to be. They're just ambitious people who have grandiose visions of what they want to make, and they just walk into a store. It's truly shopping, right?
Yes,
it's like
I was
grocery
shopping
as opposed
to
I'm going to go pick up the things that I need to prepare what I am going to make. And that's what a grocery list should do for you. And so we actually have a grocery list that we use. This is a simple template. We've used it for, gosh, maybe over 10 years.
Yeah, it's actually, I'll link it in the show notes.
Yeah, I think it's actually included in the book.
It's included in the book, but we also have a link to it.
Yeah, we have a link to
it
as well.
Loyal listeners.
So it's a simple list that you can print out, and it's broken up in 6 sections, I believe. One is fresh produce, the other is dry goods, then there's frozen section, then there's meat and seafood, bulk, and then dairy. But I think what's actually the most important part of the list is what's directly below where you would write all of the items that you wanted to pick up in the store. And that's where your menu would go. So what is it that you're having for breakfast, lunch, dinner? And then I even included a section for snacks. So for example, if I'm planning on eating like a vegetable pasta, quesadillas, and like oatmeal, I would add all of those things, all of the things that I would need to make those items above on the list, but I would always have this point of reference below so that when I'm in the store, I would know. And basically the idea is that the list should be a reflection of what it is that you're making. You're not just picking things up for the sake of picking them up. You're picking it up because you need it to make the things that you wrote below. And I think that's really, really critical. It also helps to just kind of keep you focused.
Yes.
You're only going to go to the aisles that have the things. You're not just literally wandering them, right? You're going to go pick up the things that you want, that you need, based on what you wrote. It requires a little bit of planning, but we really just have
a little... You can do it through the week.
You do it throughout the week.
We have it on the refrigerator.
Stick it on the refrigerator.
As we run out of things or as we think of things, we're just constantly adding to it.
Yep.
And then once you go, we create a new list and that's that.
You tear it off the fridge and then you head out to the store and you... More often than not, you come back literally with exactly what you went out there for. So yeah, that's important. That's a really, really important part. Because I think, I don't know, it's really weird for me as a former culinary professional, but I've learned over the years that a lot of people struggle with that, to your point, because the word shopping is in there.
Well, it's shopping and because grocery stores are great at marketing. So the things that are on sale or like flash sale or like all of a sudden Powerade is 10 for a dollar, $10 for $10, whatever it is. It's a big old display. It's bright. And it's like, well, damn, I don't need some Powerade.
They're also very manipulative.
They move things to the back.
Well, they move things to the back. And not all of the stores do this. But if you don't believe me, start taking pictures throughout the year. But I won't name the store because I actually like the store. But I know that they do this and it really annoys me. There are certain things that they do not put, you know, like the little sign that says, it'll say I-4. Mm-hmm. Tea, coffee, like there are certain things that are in that aisle that they specifically won't put on there. And they do
that
they
roam.
Want you to be lost. They want you to roam. It's like, I know it was here. Maybe they switched it around. Mm-hmm. They do that on purpose so that you spend more time in the store because they know they'll force you and you'll see a different display. You'll get to thinking like, oh, I guess I could make this.
Yeah,
oh, this is on sale this week.
Coconut.
If I don't get this today, right. Well, maybe it's not on sale this week. And then you end up with 2 bags of shredded coconut and all the other fancy chocolates and things that, you know, that's your ambitious heart.
So this is a good segue. This is a good segue because the list certainly kept me focused. But the other game changer for me was how to pick produce and ingredients that I could cross-utilize in really creative ways. So the stuff that you were able to think of doing with like, you know, leftover, like a half a head of broccoli or a random bunch of parsley was way more than I could come up with because I had never considered making things that weren't a complete meal. So I never considered putting ingredients into stocks or pureeing herbs and freezing them for marinades of things. I was just thinking like, all right, well, if I put coconut shreds on top of my oatmeal, then I could probably also make like a coconut cream pie or a coconut, like it had to be like a star ingredient versus just like something that helps another thing along.
Yeah. And you know what this also reminds me of is that the food media, very similar to the finance media, has done a really great job of presenting an image of how you should be, right? And so when I think about, you know, all of, even some of my favorite shows, it's always this image or this section or segue where the person that is cooking is just parlaying through the market.
Oh, they're just inspired.
You got a market. Oh, let's see. Let's pick
like
up
smelling
this. Let's pick
peppers.
Up this eggplant. And what is this? Oh, wow. It was like, yeah, no, that's the, no. Trust me, they knew exactly what they went to the store for. But I think it really, like, you know, forces people to just randomly just go and pick up some things and get creative. And it's like, yeah, but if you don't know what to do with it, it's just going to sit on your shelf. It's just going to take up a bunch of space. But you did mention something that I think, and we talk about this in the book, that is so, so critical for people. I think not just to keep them motivated as they're cooking more at home, but also really making sure that they're minimizing waste. And as a result, protecting their budget. And that's really cross-utilization. I think that is the key to saving money. So for example, this week I'm using broccoli. Our son loves broccoli, simple roasted broccoli. I roast it with garlic, salt and pepper. That's it. And he absolutely loves it. But I'm putting broccoli in his quesadillas as well. So mm-hmm. he just eats it as a standalone. He'll just eat broccoli like people eat French fries, even mm-hmm. like without ketchup. He just loves broccoli. But I may chop it up a little bit more and put it in quesadillas. I sometimes put broccoli in a Caesar salad, mm-hmm. That roasted broccoli in a Caesar salad. I even messed around. I recently been falling in love with calzones. And so I'll make pizza dough. And then every now and then I'll make a couple calzones and throw the broccoli in there. In the calzone, there's like fresh basil, and I'll only use half of the basil for that. But I'll use the rest of the basil in some other kind of pasta dish for our son. I have some corn, some fresh corn that I shucked and sauteed. I'm going to use that just as a little dish. We're going to have some dinner tonight. But I also know that I can make some burritos, and I can turn mm-hmm. that into a corn salsa. If you've got fruit, you know, you're not just eating the fruit as a standalone. If it gets overripe, you can freeze it. You can turn that into a smoothie. And so it's like a nonstop process of figuring out, you know, what else can I do with the ingredients that I have? You can put pears in salads. Mm-hmm. You can put broccoli, you know, in a quesadilla. You can do all, it doesn't have to be the star ingredient.
Right.
Right. It can still be your favorite, you know, whatever type of quesadilla or whatever it is that you want. You're not sacrificing flavor or nutrition, but you are getting creative. And I think more importantly, like minimizing waste. And when you do that, you're saving a lot of money, .. like without sacrificing flavor.
Yes.
And that's really what this is about. Like, because again, so many people, I think when they think about cooking at home and saving money, it's like their minds immediately go to us, oh, I'm going to be eating struggle meals, you know, throughout this entire process. You know, Dave Ramsey's out there talking about rice and beans. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh gosh, like it doesn't always have to be that. And even by the way, if you know how to make
delicious
rice and beans, you can make some delicious rice and beans.
But I can totally understand like people who don't want to eat all that. I'm so glad you brought up the waste aspect though, because I actually just wrote about food waste in my latest for Sisters from AARP. And the article is actually a reaction to this study that says that Americans spend $1,500 a month on non-essential items. And so I had the same reaction to the $1,500 thing. A month, right? So I'm going through the article and I'm like, I don't know about the $1,500 thing, but the findings are actually pretty universal.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I, you know, advise that people look out for is food waste, because even though food is one of the largest expenses after housing, Americans actually throw away 30 to 40% of the food that we buy.
Yeah.
So it's a $1 trillion problem nationally, but it's also eroding your budgeting process because it's like leaving money on the table, pun intended. So I give the tip of exactly what you're talking about, which is planned leftovers or nextovers, which is like the term for cross-utilization, a nextover, where you basically plan for several meals using the same ingredients. If you buy a rotisserie chicken, you might have chicken and rice one night, chicken salad for lunch, and then quesadillas for dinner the next day.
Yep.
And then throughout the week, if you find that your greens and your herbs are starting to wilt, you really should try to find a secondary use for them before throwing them out, whether it's blending them into sauces or whatever. And then even for the foods that are kind of finicky on expiration dates, like bread, you can just keep it in the freezer beyond the expiration date as long as you don't see any mold.
Yeah.
So it leads me to my next question about freezers, which I think is a really it's a really underutilized tool. So I wanted to ask you, he's shaking his head over here. I wanted to ask you, what are most people doing wrong with their freezers?
You know, freezers, and whenever I think about freezers, my mind immediately goes to like the place where the bodies are buried, or like where the secrets are held. It reminds me of like a child, when you ask a child to clean up their room and like 2 minutes later, they're like, I'm done. I'm like, okay, there's no way. But literally all they did was just take all their stuff and like dump it in the closet or shove it under the bed. That's how most, I think, adults treat their freezer. They pat themselves on the back and was like, I'm not wasteful. I put it in the freezer. And I'm like, okay, but like, is there a plan to actually take it out?
Or is it just thaw it or de-thaw it?
Yeah, it's just thaw.
I'm thinking of defrost.
You think of defrost. But yeah, it's like, that's how I think most people treat a freezer. It's just like a place where they hide all of their waste.
Yes.
It's yeah. It's like pre-waste.
Right. So it's another place that you want to make sure you hit up when you're doing your organizing, because if you decide to cook extra in a week, or maybe you spend extra money on like some bulk meat purchases and there's leftover from your Instant Pot, you don't have to, like Instagram shows you, put all of that in plastic and try and eat it over the next 15 days. Right. You can take half of it and freeze it for later, for those weeks that you don't feel like cooking, but you need to have room for it, and you need to have a process and a system for knowing that it's in there.
Yeah, and I will say this. This is not in our book because it was a relatively new find for us, but there are two appliances that I've actually come to really appreciate. I don't think most people need it, but if you are like really big on using a freezer, I think one, like getting freezer bags and using freezer bags,
yes,
makes a big difference versus just a regular plastic bag. But a food saver, which is like a vacuum sealed appliance, those things are amazing. And then to sort of take that to the next level is a sous vide machine.
Oh, yeah.
So shout out to our friend. She knows who she is, A Purple Life. She's a huge advocate of the sous vide machine. She has, I forget the name of her brand. Mine is called the Jewel, which is by Chef Steps. But yeah, those are two really, really handy appliances that I think actually really help in this process, because you can use the sous vide for cooking, but you can also use it for like thawing or taking things straight from the freezer right into the sous vide, which saves you like time and money. Like that part
and
effort without sacrificing flavor.
Yes.
That's really what it's all about.
All right. So I'll link to all of that in the show notes if you're interested in what sous vide we have. But before we sign out, the last thing I want to talk about is cooking skills to master, because you have, again, two theories that I want to call out because they're countercultural, counterintuitive. But the first one is that you only need to know a handful of ways to cook food.
Yeah.
And that handful offers the widest range of possibilities for anybody. So in the book, we cover six of them: knife skills, sauteing, pan roasting, stewing, braising, and blanching. But you also have this theory that when people say they don't like vegetables, it's usually because they haven't had them prepared correctly. Yeah. They haven't been cooked correctly.
Yeah.
So I'm asking this last question for the folks who have eating healthier on their resolutions, but really only think of vegetables in the form of cold salads or, you know, boiled, heated up veggies, maybe
veggies
out of the can, or steamed
Velveeta cheese or sourly seasoning on top
dump
of it.
A bunch of sugary sauces to kind of zhuzh them up. For a plant-based diet or a predominantly plant-based diet, what would you rank, or would you rank one of those cooking skills above the others?
Well, it kind of goes hand in hand, but I think learning how to blanch vegetables.
Mm.
And you know, every time I say the word, I always think of
Golden Girls. Thank you for being a friend.
But blanching vegetables, I think, is one of the most underrated cooking techniques. It's why I spent a lot of time in the book talking about it. And basically, blanching is a way of pre-cooking. You're basically boiling something very quickly, removing it from that water, and shocking it in ice to stop the cooking process. That's important because if you got like a really hard vegetable, like let's say a carrot or even something like asparagus, which isn't necessarily hard, but you know, you can eat it raw, but it can be pretty crunchy and most people don't like to eat it raw. But if you blanch it first, then after that, you can do any number of things that impart flavor way more than you could if you just steamed it.
Yes.
Right. So if you blanched it, then you can grill it and it tastes amazing. Like you would want grilled asparagus with any other things that you're grilling that day, or you can saute it, or you can pan roast it. You wouldn't necessarily braise it. But so, yeah, I would say blanching, but blanching when it comes to vegetables typically will go hand in hand with some other cooking technique, even though in some cases you can just blanch something and eat it just like that. Like our son, for example, he loves helping me blanch vegetables. He'll eat them when they're sort of semi-cooked because they're far better, like a blanched green bean than a raw green bean, right? It's almost like a little chip. It's still kind of crunchy. It also looks better. When you blanch vegetables, they still maintain their natural color instead of like that sad brown, grayish looking canned color that I think a lot of people are have been accustomed convinced
is green.
But this is part of the reason why people, I understand why most, and I'm specifically calling out Americans, don't like vegetables because they really haven't had great vegetables. You don't know what fresh sauteed or fresh roasted corn or fresh grilled corn tastes like. And so you're perfectly fine with the milky, creamy stuff that comes out of the can.
Yeah.
And I've had it. I've been there. But I'm just saying.
Well, I've never described it that way. Milky, creamy stuff that comes out of a can. That's just what. Well, and on that note.
Now that your appetite is ruined.
I know. Final thoughts.
All right. Bring us home.
So my final thought is, after talking about food for so many years with different people, I've really started to understand that there are a lot of parallels between cooking and money. Not only do people think that trying harder is the answer to all their problems, they also feel like doing it well is something that only experts or chefs can do. But I'm here to tell you and tell myself, because this continues to be a challenge for me, that developing your instincts around food is actually way more valuable than continuing to up your efforts.
I like that. I like that.
So get lazy with it, y'all.
Get lazy. all right. So my final thought is that food television, food entertainment is just that. It's entertainment. But most of it is unfortunately hype. I know. I'm sorry. But it's really hype. A lot of the things, a lot of the techniques and the things that you're seeing.
Highly produced.
It's highly produced. That's not really what it's going to look like when you do it. I'm so sorry. No,
that's the most perfect version of the 6 takes that they took.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And the same goes for recipes and cookbooks. They look good on the library and they are basically just photos, you know, like they're great sort of printed
staged
photography, but like your stuff is probably not going to look that way. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Just focus on making it taste good, which really boils down to mastering technique, getting familiar with ingredients, focusing on fresh ingredients. Like, it's one thing to get fresh produce from a restaurant, but if you're going to use 3-year-old black pepper on top of it, it's not going to taste good. So all around, focus on freshness, purge your stuff. Like, my final thought is basically a recap of the entire conversation. But I will also say we should offer a promo code for our ebook. So I define the ebook as, it's like having a chef in your back pocket. It's a really easy and fun read. You can get a PDF version if you want. You can also get an ebook
Kindle
version on Amazon Kindle. You can also get it on Apple Books, but it's entitled Eat Better on a Budget. And let's use the code SUCCESS.
Oh, love
that. SUCCESS.
And I'll link to everything.
And you will save, make up a number, 40%.
There you go. That's 40%.
It is generous.
All right.
There it is. Final thoughts. Save some money and start cooking and eating better on a budget today.
I love it. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by SUCCESS. If you like what you heard, we want you to talk about it. Get it? Taco. About it. Talk about it. Talk about it.
Do better.
We want you to talk about it on the ratings and review page, and we will see y'all next week.
Till next time.